We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session of the Mesa City Council for Thursday, October 30th, 2008. We'd like to excuse. We wouldn't like to exclude, but we have excluded because we're excusing Councilmember Kavanaugh, who is unable to be with us this morning and will not be joining us by phone. And I haven't heard anything from Councilmember Ripkins. Must be running a little bit late. Okay, we'll begin with item number one, review items for the agenda for this upcoming Monday's council meeting, November 3rd. Page two, Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, item 4B. Is anyone here from item 4B? It's the procurement of the yellow LED modules. Sorry, I didn't. Good morning. I had wondered, reading through that with like 84 people picking up bid requests and the whole thing, we only got one company to give us a bid. Is it a complicated item? Is there not enough people in the business? I just wondered what the history was.
Yeah, because there's 84 doesn't mean that they necessarily carry that product or bid it. My understanding on the, I wasn't involved with this the first time around, but the first time we bid this, it was for all the colors, green and yellow and red. However, there was a protest during the bid on some of the specifications for this yellow bid, yellow LED. And so we pulled that and then have rebid it. We rewrote the specs, cleaned them up, and sent it out again. So my understanding is there was only one that actually met the specs.
That's correct. And if you'd like some more information, I can certainly get that. This is a bid that went out. We were able to fill, as John said, the red and the green real easily, but due to the protest, it's got delayed a few times, or you would have seen this a couple months ago.
But it's not really. Is it a major complicated? Just generic.
It is, yes. Not.
Yeah, okay. So there's just not enough people making this. So that's a good advertisement to other people.
We're happy with the price, certainly, but we can't just go to Walmart, certainly, and get these.
Right. I understand. Okay, thanks.
So we actually, we actually bid red, yellow, and green separately?
Not intentionally, Mayor. We bid them all together. The yellow.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to find something that's not sort of hilarious, funny in this, that we're bidding different colors of LEDs. That's interesting to me.
The yellow was pulled out just because that was the one that had the conflict. And frankly, I'm not familiar exactly what the was contested. The red and the greens were able to be processed.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
The next one, actually, for Charlie, which is the refuge and recycling containers? Barrels. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
The question at this time is, it seems like there's a $560,000 change to convert the RV parks to barrels at this time. I mean, that's the numbers. So do we make up enough money with their recycling or the different way that we're going to save money collecting their barrels to offset that?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, for the two parks, right now we bring in about $35,000 a year in collecting the trash there, and there's no recycling that we're doing there. By making the conversion, we're going to be bringing in $159,000, and the cost of the barrels is $189,000, so we recoup our investment in 1 year, 7 months.
So what's the big change then? What is the $560,000 difference?
We need to increase our contract limit. Right now, our contract limit only goes to the 560, and to be able to convert the parks, we've got to increase the contract limit by $111,000.
Will, you're not necessarily spending
that
$1 million.
No.
Okay. Oh, you're
no.
Just
increasing.
We're increasing it by $111,000, not by $560,000.
Right.
Okay.
So that just gives you the opportunity
purchase
to go higher.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? During my reading, I had the wrong number circled. That's what happens when you read late at night. No. And I thought we were increasing it by $560,000, which seemed like a lot for barrels at this time. Thank you very much.
Come on.
Thanks, Mayor.
Okay. Page three. Page four. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, on 6 Alpha.
Okay.
Well, in that whole series of annexation cases, not really. We'll just separate it out. We're just introducing that, correct?
Yes, that's introduction of ordinance. So we won't actually be discussing it. Well, we could discuss it, but the action will be taken later.
We're going to be talking about the new annexation policy, I guess, today, too. Getting a presentation on annexation. And I just wondered, this is 11 vacant acres up tucked up south of Lascendis in the county island there. And is it possible to add conditions of approval to the homes that they're going to build on this property before annexation could occur?
Yes, all of the development out there will have to comply to full City of Mesa development standards, including the infrastructure, water, sewage, roadways, all of those things, setbacks. They'll have to conform to all of our standards.
But you couldn't say, because of its location, that you want the new homes to be sprinkled, to have fire sprinklers in there?
At this point in time, the code doesn't require sprinklers, for depending on how it all works out. I mean, if they're a certain size and beyond the fire hydrants, then part of the plan approval would require fire sprinklers. But for your standard residential home, the code does not require it.
Well, I think the question is, could you?
Yeah, I guess that's
a condition of annexation.
Councilmember Higgins, you know, thinking off the top of my head, the only thing we could pursue is a development agreement in some way, a pre-annexation development agreement, which would place requirements on the development that's going to come in. But as Christine said, we don't currently require that in the code, so it would be something unusual, and we have not required that in the past.
Okay.
And so, I mean, just to follow up that a little bit, because we're going to discuss this more, one of the major issues in these county island annexations is adequate coverage for fire hydrants and others. And I guess, if I understand where you're headed, perhaps one of the mitigating factors that we could introduce, if the fire department doesn't feel comfortable, let's say with distance to a fire hydrant, and I'm assuming that we would either require the fire hydrant to be extended or brought closer to come into compliance with what the fire department has, since there's nothing being built or built there right now, or we could explore as part of a pre-annexation agreement, saying in lieu of or in order to cover that gap, if you'll need to sprinkle. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mayor, yes, we could look into that.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
I was going to bring this up later, but on page 97C, we have an annexation of a property owner who had a 2,100 square foot barn or 2,000 square foot barn in the back. And in order to annex, he voluntarily agreed to add sprinklers as opposed to the fire hydrant. The fire hydrant cost was $8,000 or more, and the sprinklers were $2,000 when he was done. But how did we
require that? I'm not sure.
I think he kind of did it voluntarily with our strong urging, in a way.
And I'm assuming so, Councilmember Summers. I'm not familiar with that project.
Well, let me ask a question, staff. Were we not going to recommend that annexation because of its issues regarding fire?
Correct. If they hadn't come up to the code and met the fire requirements, staff recommendation would have been denial. He opted to comply with the fire department requirements by putting sprinklers in as opposed to bringing in a fire hydrant.
So in the case that Councilmember Higgins brought up, would that be, I mean, do they meet the fire code currently?
Well,
or
that's
will
undeveloped
they
land.
It's so, undeveloped.
Right, so
they
when they come in and their plans are reviewed, they will have to put in the proper fire hydrants, the water line, before they're allowed to develop.
Gotcha. There's too many cases. I can hardly keep track.
I understand.
Well, yep. And I think that going forward, I mean, you raise an interesting issue that goes far beyond just a single case. We're talking about this in other areas as a way to provide adequate fire protection without expending the money up front on new fire stations, things like that. Sprinklers are certainly an option or a possibility where we can close that gap. And it's something that I think we ought to be discussing more as developers come in. I know it's not in the code, it's not required, but then on the other hand, we're faced with the real dilemma of we have development going in that frankly we are challenged to provide adequate levels of service. And, you know, this is certainly one thing that we can throw on the table that would enable them to maybe develop without either giving up that service and putting their at more risk, or else having that us stretched to our limitations. Fire sprinklers are certainly an alternative, and I think it's something that will come up more often, so, and should come up more often.
And I think, Mayor, that's what's happening, actually. I mean, I think that's why these cases are, when we're reviewing them, if a determination is made that they're, especially areas that are in the county islands that are already developed, let's start with those, which is probably the majority of our cases right now.
Actually, I would say the majority of them probably already have homes on them.
Right, so that's the dilemma there is then if they are, the distance from a fire hydrant is beyond our code, then we have, or the setbacks are significantly back from the street for us to be able to reach. That's where we have a challenge in being able to recommend for annexation because of the impacts it has on fire. Now, certainly, I think we've talked about with some of these property owners is the possibility for them to go to consider sprinkling or to provide additional fire hydrants.
Correct.
So we've considered
They could even retrofit. I know that's not the easiest thing in the world, but they could retrofit their house with sprinkling.
So we're already
having
that discussion today. So
that's good. I think that's a good solution for a problem that we're not going to – we keep wishing it would go away, and for some reason it just keeps coming back. So thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
I'll bring it up, too. It certainly will help. There's an annexation case coming up. It's not an annexation case, but it's a zoning case for residential. It's item 6E on page 8, which Pulte's looking to do. Pulte does great homes, by the way. Pulte's looking to do another home development at 5400 South Mountain Road. Well, Mountain Road's the area we affectionately refer to as Texas that has no fire station. It's a 12-minute response time if the closest fire company is in. And had the vote back in 98, I think it was, or it's about 10 years ago, where sprinklers happened, the vast majority of the homes in this area would have had fire sprinklers in them and would have added to the public safety of that area. So that needs to be we need to encourage that as an option for developers and help provide more trade-offs to the communities if they were to put them in.
Yeah, and I think that, once again, without revisiting, because I remember that vote well and how contentious it was, this is not to force sprinklers, but I believe the reality is that we have areas that we simply cannot provide a high level of service right now. That's the reality. That's not a threat or anything. It's like out there at Mountain Road. It's the way it is. We don't have a fire station. We have long response times. And when public safety is at risk, there are alternatives. And there are to investing huge amounts into infrastructure, we can explore and should explore other alternatives, and perhaps sprinklers in new subdivisions or new developments where the service is questionable is certainly something that I think we should explore as a trade-off and as an incentive for those developers to provide a high level of public safety services. Okay.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
That's all right. Anything else on page 7? Page 8. Councilmember Richards?
I think it would be helpful for the public to have some clarification on 6F. There's a little nervousness there about that recently passed ordinance keeping separation on council use permits. That involves some clarifying language between some transitional correctional facility homes and some payday loan spacing. And
Mr. Sheffield?
So just to make sure that people understand what we're doing here, I think it would be helpful.
Mayor, council members, the prior city council adopted the two ordinances last May, one for correctional transitional housing facilities and the other one for payday loans. Both of those ordinances affected section 1163 of the city code, of the zoning ordinance. The problem was the language for both of those, when they were adopted, didn't match exactly. They were very, very close. We got like out of 100 words, we got 99 right, but there's one or two words that didn't match exactly. And so what this does is goes in, and typically, when there's minor errors like that, there's something called a Scrivener's errors process or a Scribe's errors process where we might be able to rectify that. We can't do that this time because there are enough of these, I want to call them silly mistakes, and they're my errors, quite frankly, that we need to go back and correct those. And what this does is basically come back, adopt the same language that the council adopted last time, and take away some of the redundancies and some of the minor errors that are in the language. But it doesn't, there's no change in policy that's proposed with this particular ordinance.
Can I just ask a couple questions about the council use permit in general?
Sure.
There's after each definition of the facility that requires a council use permit, there's a series of, it seems like, minimum standards that are there. Tell me about the relationship to those minimum standards and the approval process for council. Because I've had people come up and say, well, we've met the minimum standards, you have to approve this. And there, I think there's still a little bit of subjectiveness whether or not we can approve something, even if they meet minimum standards. Is that correct or is that not correct?
I think my understanding is yes, but Debbie might want to clarify that.
Councilmember Richens, a council use permit is an administrative act. It's not a legislative act. So a legislative act, the council has absolute discretion to decide what it determines to be best interest of the city of Mesa. An administrative act is less discretion because you have criteria set out. Now, so you should be looking at the criteria that is identified. Now, a lot of the, oftentimes the criteria is based on policy. Is it consistent with the land use next door, or is it going to cause problems in the neighborhood? Those kind of policy statements are used as a criteria. Certainly, if it's that type of criteria where it says, is it consistent with surrounding land use, that gives you the discretion to determine, is it consistent or is it inconsistent? So there is discretion generally built in, but it is not legally the same level of discretion as it is if it's considered a legislative act, such as zoning is a legislative act by the council.
Would it be more helpful to have no minimum standards, just say a council use permit is granted at the discretion of the city council, period?
Now, there should be,
instead of having all of these things listed out, that it gives people almost a false hope that, oh, I've met these minimum standards, I should be approved.
Well, there should be criteria set out so that the public knows, you know, do they, is this something that the council would consider, and what basis or criteria is the council using in making these decisions? Again, because it is an administrative act, it's not legally required that you have the criteria set out. On the other hand, you know, again, this is not the same level of discretion as a purely legislative act by the council.
I guess my question on that would be, if there are criteria set out, why, and it's an administrative act, why do we bring them back to council? Why isn't it handled administratively?
Because normally this criteria, first, the council has chosen to do that. You are not required to have it come back to council.
So we could set the rules and have it be purely administrative and not come back to us, and have, for example, staff. Because if we've set the rules, I'm sitting here wondering if you go down the checklist and mark 1 through 6, why is it coming back to council when really we should be setting policy? And if we've set the rules and they comply with the rules, it could be handled administratively.
And Mayor, you can do that.
Okay.
And we do that on some cases, the special use permit. Those are decided by staff. But the council, prior councils have established the council use permit. These type of situations, the council wants coming back to the council. And as I said before, in the council use permit, usually the criteria is a little broader, more policy statement types, statements. And that gives the council, gives the public the criteria that the council will look at, but it gives the council enough flexibility to decide, is this the kind of project or the location where this land use should be permitted.
Councilmember Richards.
Ultimately, it is a political process, and so I would love to see these criteria just gone, because it's a lot easier if it's just leave it where it is. It's a purely political process. Get rid of these minimum standards. Say, hey, council use permits are granted at the discretion of the city council, and then it's game on. But I know I would hear from my neighbors in very loud legion down here if it was just an administrative function. And
Mayor, if I could add just a little bit.
Mr. Sheffield.
A couple of things. One of the reasons why criteria are used in any kind of use permit, whether it's a council use permit, a special use permit, or the administrative use permits that we do over the counter typically has to do with trying to limit that discretion. I've read some court cases recently where if you give unlimited discretion on a ministerial act, then that causes issues later on. You can deny it for any reason or you can approve it for any reason. And that typically, as I understand in from what I've read from these court documents, is typically not what they're looking for. In other words, if you're going to set up the use permit process, the idea is there's some condition that you want to avoid for some reason. And so rather than just saying you can do it anyway, you're setting up a use permit process to provide additional criteria by which to review this particular activity, whatever it is, and then have that activity be reviewed so that it's understood that it complies with that criteria. The reason the councils in the past, or past councils, have had council use permits is that they didn't want to delegate that decision-making process down to either the Board of Adjustment for special use permits or to staff for other types of things. They wanted to keep that decision-making process to themselves. And there have typically been for things that are somewhat controversial, things like, the things that you see in there now, things like pawn shops, things like tattoo parlors, things like soup kitchens and those types of things, where they wanted to limit those types of activities, they wanted to limit the number of those types of things going on. So they wanted to make that process, I don't want to say difficult, but they wanted to make sure that they had their hand in on the decision.
But Vice Mayor, then we'll go on.
For that very reason, Gordon, we have minimum criteria which give them an idea of what to be looking for, but it's no guarantee that's what they're going to get.
Correct.
Because typically these are emotionally charged digs that neighborhoods get all in an uproar about, and if it were administrative, the neighborhood wouldn't be involved. The people wouldn't be able to really have that involvement. That's where it comes to the council, where we get to take the hits from everybody and make that decision. But it really is, they have to have some basic guideline to go on of absolutely, if you don't meet this minimum, there's absolutely no way. But above that minimum, there may be other extenuating reasons why you cannot do it, and the council will make that determination. So they have to have some basic guide to go on, but it is no means a guarantee that if I meet the minimum standards, it's a shoo-in. It's not really that
way. Councilman Richens?
A little bit about this administrative versus legislative act. Does the council use permit run with the applicant, or does it run with the property?
Councilmember Richens, that's actually something that's not been presented directly to the court, so we don't have a specific answer. However, because it is, even whether it's a council use permit is legislative versus administrative is not clear. There has been a number of cases that have come out in the past 5 years that we're now comfortable that a council use permit is more likely to be determined an administrative act, not legislative. However, what that means is it's more towards the applicant, and we would be comfortable that if the council were to grant a council use permit for a help me out, what are we, give me an example of a council
pawn parlor.
Pawn shop. Okay. If you were to issue a or approve a council use permit for a pawn shop, that one of the stipulations on that ordinance could be that this is for the applicant and is non-transferable. If it were considered a legislative act, it's more likely to transfer with the land or be attached to the land.
And that's how it's been in the past.
That's how it's been in the past, but we have, in the last few years, been supportive of the council adding that this council use permit is for the applicant, this particular applicant.
Does that have to be added as a stipulation?
Yes.
Because stipulations I feel very uncomfortable with, because I keep getting zone attorneys coming knocking on my door wanting to remove stipulations a year after a public process. And I feel very uncomfortable removing stipulations after a public process has happened,
right?
You know, even 5 years after a process. So is there a way to assign it to the applicant, not through the stipulation, but through the regular process of granting the council use permit?
Well, the regular process is for the ordinance to come forward. The council use permit comes before the council as an ordinance. One of the stipulations on that ordinance is that it is to this applicant and not is non-transferable. For then to this stipulation to be removed, it has to go through the whole public process again. So it would have to go through the public process, come before council, be introduced, and be considered by the council to remove that stipulation.
So are you saying that all future council use permits that we grant will be granted to the applicant and not run with the land?
It will depend on what the ordinance says. If that is included as a stipulation, then yes.
What the ordinance says or what the permit?
It's on the ordinance, Mayor.
Okay.
And it's a stipulation on the ordinance.
Okay.
The ordinance you signed for the permit.
Right.
So the ones in the past that were assigned to the land that seemed to be transferring from owner to owner to owner, that condition no longer exists in Mesa. We don't do it that way anymore.
I think it depends on how it comes before you. An option is to have a stipulation that it is limited to the applicant and does not run with the land. But you are correct. In past, we had not used that stipulation, and that's how it's been transferred. But we have, in the past 3-4 years, added that stipulation to certain council use permits.
I think this merits probably some further discussion because, as you said, we sort of set the rules as a council, and previous councils have decided to do it one way, and I think there's enough question here. I feel a little uncomfortable with the fact that if we set criteria and someone complies with that criteria, I don't want a council to be put in a position where you basically have to say yes, because I don't think that's a proper role. I think if we set the rules and someone meets the rules, then it should just be an administrative function. At the other hand, if you say there is discretion involved, then whether it's basic standards or no standards, we basically, it's a discretionary judgment call. And somehow there's that balance that I think we as a council probably need to figure out what we feel comfortable with, regardless of what's gone on in the past. Using that as a guide, because, you know, the previous councils have gone through that process. They obviously decided on a certain level they were comfortable with, but, you know, this probably merits a little bit more discussion. So,
Mayor, if I might, and I agree with what you just said, but let me give you an example of how one of our requirements is that the use is found to be compatible with surrounding uses. So that gives criteria, is it consistent with surrounding use? But the council has the discretion to make the determination, is it consistent with surrounding use? The courts, if ever challenged, would give the council great deference in terms of its finding that whether it is or is not compatible with the surrounding uses.
Okay. If we could, you know, we can't get into that detail today, but if we could maybe just put it for a future one, we can, future meeting, we could discuss it a little bit more, get to understand exactly the process and air out how we feel about it. Councilmember Richens?
Should probably clarify that I do feel comfortable with this staying on consent and the clarification of this language. I just saw this as finally my opportunity to look at this council use permit process. It's craziness. So,
okay. Councilmember Fenter.
Just wanted to express my appreciation for Mr. Sheffield, all the good work he does. I've had opportunities to go out to meetings in the neighborhoods, and it's nice to have a clear, defined discussion, and Mr. Sheffield does an excellent job of that. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Gordon. Okay, now, were we on page 8?
Yes.
Okay. Allegedly, anything else on page 8? Page 9, Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, items 7 Bravo and 7 Charlie, they're on consent, but staff is recommending denial. So if you approve the consent agenda, do you approve the denial?
Yes.
Okay, so you agree with the staff. Well,
Councilmember Higgins, thank you for pointing that out. We will make that clear. What we have been trying to do is, if it is for denial, we will say consent means, and then we'll say denial, so that it's clear to the council and to the public what, if it stays on consent, what that means.
Great.
Councilmember Summers?
7C was the one I had brought up earlier, which was the gentleman met the fire code by adding the sprinkler system. So
that would not be for denial. It would be for approval.
Is that one for approval?
No, it's for denial.
Okay. We need to pull that off. Okay.
Pull it off or...
Yeah, that is.
Are we going to clarify it for approval, or do we need to pull it off and make a different recommendation?
AO733 should be for approval.
Okay, so it's changed to approval since the applicant has met,
yes,
or satisfied the...
Has installed the fire sprinkler.
Okay, if we could just clarify that by Monday, that's exactly what we're voting on. Thank you.
Because those are ones approval is denied.
Yeah, because we have a mix there.
We just made it.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on page 9? Page 10? Just one item. On page 10, item, well, 9 and 10, items 9 all relate to Mesa Proving Grounds and the Gaylord. We have a couple of items there, item 9A and 9B, that require separate votes, so they'll remain off. Probably items 9C through 9J, we will probably consider as one item on a sort of a mini consent. Okay. Yes.
Perhaps when we call for the public vote, we should do that as a separate vote.
That's one thing we might consider as a separate item, 9J. We'll see how that plays out. But we're not going to take 10 separate votes on those, I don't believe. However, the most we'll have is probably 4 separate votes if everyone's in approval with that. Okay? Page 10, page 11. Okay. Thank you. Item number 2, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. Mr. Villa and Ms. Carolyn. I know I got something.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We'd just like to go through and give you an update on the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. And again, just to give you a little bit of background about it, the program was created to assist state and local governments in addressing the effects of abandoned and foreclosed properties that we're having throughout the nation. The big issue with the program is to provide stabilization for neighborhoods. And for consideration, what's happening is we're being allocated CDBG funds for fiscal year 08-09 to accomplish this, and Mesa's allocation is $9,659,000. And again, when we came back to you a couple of weeks ago, you gave us direction to focus on the areas in and around 85204, which we're planning on doing with the program. And the main goal of the program is to provide permanent and sustainable housing in that area to create some stabilization for the area and to make sure that that stabilization is long-lasting and not just a temporary fix. We're also going to work closely with our nonprofit organizations to work to accomplish this goal, and not just in the form that we've done in the past where we hand out the money, but to meet with them regularly to make sure that we're accomplishing and meeting these goals. And finally, 2 weeks ago, we put out RFPs to our nonprofits, and these are the nonprofits that submitted RFPs to the process. And again, you know, there a lot of them you're familiar with that have been a big part of Mesa for many years, and some that are new from the outside that also applied for the funding. And I just want to state that Mark Center was probably one of the better ones that gave us a really good direction to what we were wanting to accomplish and the goal. And we're going to be meeting with all these nonprofits on tomorrow to go over their application and to make sure that everybody's meeting our goals.
Mayor.
And again, the
Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Villa, I just wondered, item 2, permanent and sustainable housing, I didn't think that was the only goal of the neighborhood stabilization. I mean, when you first presented it, there were like many things that could actually help stabilize a neighborhood. So, I mean, you know, that's shows up as the only goal. Is that now the only thing you're looking at?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at is because of the effect that the foreclosure and abandoned properties have happened in the area, that's probably our main goal. It's not going to be our only goal, but will be the main goal of the program. And only because we feel that to have a long-lasting effect and to really make a transition in that area, we have to really focus on permanent housing, and not so much transitional housing, which oftentimes that can be another option that we could have. But transitional housing not necessarily creates an opportunity for us to really make a difference in an area. So we felt that in order to make sure that we're going in the right direction, to put together permanent and sustainable housing. Now, again, it's not going to be the only thing that we're going to do, but it's going to be the main thing.
Well, I think that the sense I got from the last discussion we had here at Council was that how we used it, these funds had to be sort of self-contained.
Right.
In other words, I sensed that the Council was giving direction. While there are other things we could spend this on, we did not want to spend the money and create an obligation going forward to where we would have to draw on other funds, specifically city general fund monies, to continue what we began here, that this needed to be sort of self-contained. So we spend it, we build the house, we accomplish our goal, we use the grant as we have it, and then we let that sort of on its own increase or enhance the neighborhood. Is that, Mr. Brady, is that accurate?
Yes, Mayor and Council, and I think one of the ideas that we're looking at, I think the list of things that we talked about that we could do under these funds, we're not suggesting we're not going to do them, which it just talked about assembling of land, land banking, demolition, rehab. Those are all contained within this permanent sustainable housing. What we're concerned about is this is an area that's already sees a lot of transitional residents, and while we did have quite a few applications from our nonprofits who that's an area that they do well in, one of the things we're going to try to work with them in trying to, as we look at this area, is really maybe trying to find opportunities for more, as opposed to having homeowners who are only there for less than a couple of years, is really trying to create an environment or establishing communities within this area where we can create a little more of a permanent fixture of residents who can will be there for the long term, who are willing to invest in the community. One of the things we're looking at too is trying to establish large community areas that we want to establish that are contiguous, as opposed maybe to being able to do it more as a individual property owners spread throughout the area. So we're going to see if there's a way to group things together to really stabilize, maybe instead of doing 50 different homes in a variety of different areas, maybe we do 50, but they're grouped in 10s or 15, so you can put it all together, whether you're rehabbing those facilities or you're actually demolishing them and then creating a new community within this 85204 area. It's kind of the area we're trying to go to, because my sense from the council is the idea of this is an opportunity to really kind of stabilize this area, bring in some new investment, and maybe even a different type of resident who, if we can attract them with the right type of development, will be committed to being there for the long term. And that's what we're are aspiring to at this point.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that that you don't create a stable area by having transitory housing. That just has never shown to be proven to be true. You know, the way that you create a sustainable and a stabilized area is through home ownership. And why we would use this for anything other than trying to advance that goal, because I don't think that there's any way you can stabilize a neighborhood without home ownership, which brings the pride of ownership in the long term and a long term residence in a stable neighborhood. So
that's correct. Okay. And finally, I just want to go back through the timeline and just we're submitting our recommendation again to the city manager here next week. And we'll be coming back, and we have to do a public notice on this. And we'll start that next week. And then we'll be bringing it back to council next Thursday for the action plan amendment. And then, again, we'll have a comment period and then bring back the to council back on the 20th for consideration. And with the hope to have the application into HUD by the 24th of November, which the deadline date is actually December 1st, but we want to make sure that we're in enough time to go ahead and make any corrections that we have to.
Councilmember Richens.
How much flexibility is there in this once we've established the course of action? You know, say there aren't enough homes available to expend all the funds in this our target area. Is there flexibility to go outside that target area and get some of the other areas?
Well, and I think we're talking about a focus of 85204, but we're not necessarily limiting ourselves to that in the application, I believe.
That's correct.
Is that correct? So, correct. And we understand, we agree that there will be areas outside of 85204 where we may be able to do a significant impact, maybe with just a couple of properties, you know, some properties that are blighted or whatever, that we really, it'd be nice just to be able to go and address those, and that may could for a big difference for an entire block. 85204 is probably where we're going to spend most of our planning efforts to try to establish these community plans. It's kind of, I think, we've talked about.
You know, and the other thing that we're going to do a little differently with this money that we haven't done before in the past is that we're going to create an actual team to evaluate everything that we do in these areas to make sure that we're really accomplishing some of our goals, and that, you know, when we meet regularly, not just, you know, quarterly things, but we meet regularly to make sure that we're going in the right direction and accomplishing those goals. And the planning process is consistent, and it's really going in the direction that we're getting the best benefit for our neighborhood.
Councilmember Higgins?
Right. The other concern I have is, how does a nonprofit purchase a house, rehab it, without having the funds up front? Because basically, they would like, we'll just pick somebody. They're going to buy a fourplex and level it and put up a single-family home. And then they're going to submit their receipts to you, and you're going to submit your receipts to HUD, and HUD's going to give you a check, and you're going to give them a check. But that means we have to have a nonprofit that has that much money up front to even begin the process. How do they do that?
Currently, that's the same process that we utilize for CDBG, is they do have to front the money, and then we front it to the organization, and then we go back and ask for reimbursement from HUD. The organization spends the money, and then they submit their invoice to us, and then we approve that to make sure it's all eligible. And then city currently does front that money to the organization. And then we go, and then we request that from HUD.
So that means Mark Center, I'll just pick somebody, has this project, and they want to buy the fourplex, but they need $2 million. The city will actually give them up front? Because no. When you say front the money, what does front the money mean?
After we have received the invoice and approved that to make sure all costs are eligible.
Okay.
The city provides the funding even before we get reimbursed by the federal government. So we're the ones that are on the hook.
But the nonprofit has to have the money ahead of time in order to start the project and finish the project.
That's correct.
These programs are reimbursable programs. So it's either the city would put its money at risk on the front end before seeing invoices, which is not something we would typically do. We would those expenses have to occur, and then we have to review them, improve them, and then reimburse.
Councilmember Richens?
I think that's you've made a really great argument why it's important to build the capacity of our nonprofit sector, that they're well-financed, well-funded, have access to capital when they need it. Because when opportunities like this come up, they do need to cash flow it, and it's difficult. And I think a lot of our Mason nonprofits should be commended for how creative they've been in getting projects done, but it really is about capacity. And I was glad to see on this list that there's nonprofits from outside the city that are coming in and looking at this as an opportunity as well, because some of the nonprofits that have been operating in Phoenix and around the valley for a long time have a large amount of capacity and capital to be able to pull projects off and to do them quickly. So thanks.
Yep.
Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, just a general question of how, you know, you were saying earlier the main thing is home ownership that builds sustainable houses, or neighborhoods. But we have, you know, we have Save the Family working on houses, the Mark Center, traditional or transitional living communities. How are you looking at that, those people's projects compared with, you know, the goal of home ownership? How are you weighing all that?
Well, what we're doing is we're doing two criteria. One is we're looking back to see the kind of history that they have with using CDBG funds to see how well, you know, they've performed in the past and how well they've been able to accomplish the goals of doing some of this. And the second part is that we will meet with them to make sure that that whatever goal that we establish for our program, that they have, they understand that goal and that they're able to meet that. And, you know, we may be able to do some transitional homes for some of the communities that do provide some of that, but we also make them understand that it has to be a limited amount in specific areas, but we'll be planning that in such a way that we'll be able to manage it properly and really accomplish our long-term goal.
But let me clarify, too, and Ray's being very diplomatic about it. We are concerned that the majority of the requests from nonprofits was for transitional living facilities. That is not our primary goal. That there may be a role for that ultimately, but frankly, our first priority, and this is kind of where we're having this discussion with council, we want to get that, you know, confirmation, is really to establish these more sustainable, stable communities within this area. Because as I was suggesting, is our concern is that is one of the challenges for this area, is the turnover of residents, whether it's home ownership or even a long-time renter. We see that as really our target, someone who's willing to invest and be committed to the community in the long term. Some of these transitional living centers, you're not getting that over time. Now, we're not saying there's not a role for that, but it's not the main overriding goal that we're trying to achieve.
Well, and I think that you have goals which are both very, very commendable and very good. One is to create stable families and individuals. The other is to create stable neighborhoods. You can have stable families, but if they're in transitory living, you still don't get a stable neighborhood. And I think that our once again, the goal and objective here is to create a sustainable and stable neighborhood. Not that those others aren't important. Certainly they are. You got to have both to have a great community. But in this particular case, with these particular funds, I think our primary goal is to create a stable neighborhood. And that gets back to permanency. We'd love to have stable families in permanent housing. That's the ultimate goal for all of us. I think we have to focus in on why we have these particular funds and what this grant is and what we're trying to accomplish here. Not that the other is not incredibly important. It is. But, sometimes you can't have both. And I think we would lose sight of the ultimate goal if we just focus on the transitory. Yeah, it's a great cause, but it probably won't accomplish our goal of a stable neighborhood. And that comes only through permanency. So, Vice Mayor.
Well, then I will go back to my comments from the previous discussion when you first brought this to us, is my preference is for the home ownership programs, because that is what's going to bring us the stability in this sustainable neighborhood, not the transitional living. So those who will help families get into a home, help train them to be homeowners, for me personally, is the focus I'm after.
And I think that's the sense of the discussion that's come out in the last couple meetings. So, okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay. Item number three, hear presentation, discuss and provide direction on change to the annexation process as recommended by the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Angelica Guevara, and I'm here to give you a brief presentation on annexations. I will also be presenting the proposed change to the annexation policy to allow staff to set up an administrative process to allow the sale of utilities to properties located outside of the Mesa City limits without the requirement of annexation. And that would occur when the site complies with city development standards. And due to operational cost or service issue with the city, it is not in the best interest of the city to annex the property. And this proposal was presented to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee on September 8th with a recommendation to Council for approval. Under the current policy, annexations are voluntary, and city services and utilities are provided with annexation. Under the direction of the prior council, the change was approved back in April or May and went into effect July 1st to establish the annexation equity fee. What that annexation equity fee did was establish an equitable way for properties to annex that had previously developed in the county. It was basically established to remove the incentive of developing in the county and then annexing into the city. The current review of annexation applications go through a comprehensive evaluation consisting of the location within the planning area and compliance with the general plan. We are also requiring the installation of improvements that do comply with city development standards or an approved equivalent. One of those equivalents could be an in-lieu payment made by the property owner if the city determines that street improvements are not required at the time of annexation. The cost for these improvements is paid by the property owner, And one of the other items of evaluation from staff is access to the property and ensuring that all necessary dedications are made on the property, and we evaluate it for the impact on city operations and city services as well, which is where we're currently coming forward with this proposed change, because we did encounter some issues with the ability to provide services such as solid waste and fire or emergency services. We also evaluate the cost of the cost to the city in providing these services. This is a list of the departments and divisions that are involved in the review of these annexation applications. We include the engineering department, fire department, police department, solid waste, transportation and utilities, just to name a few. And after an analysis is made by each of these departments on that application, we do receive comments and analyze them, and then make a recommendation for council on for council to act on. The recommended change that we have to the annexation policy today is to allow staff to provide it an administrative process to allow the utility service agreements with property owners without annexation of the residential properties when annexation is not in the best interest of the city and the property complies with all of the city's development standards and the applicant agrees to pay all required fees. Some of the examples of when it is not in the best interest of the city to annex is when we have operational costs to the city. And we found that we had some cases where that was occurring with solid waste services. We also have other service issues or found service issues with fire vehicle access, hydrant location, hydrant flow capacity, and or if we found that they had inconsistent zoning, or we had address issues within gated communities, where it created the potential for emergency access response issues. And then as far as requiring the applicant to pay all required fees, the fee that would be associated with that would be a utility service fee, which would be paid by the property when it is in the county and they are receiving city services prior to annexation. That fee is generally equivalent to the city's current impact fees. The only cost associated to the city with this proposed change to the annexation policy is in unrealized state shared revenues, which are approximately equivalent to about $1,040 per dwelling unit. Like I said before, this change was presented to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee on September 8th, and they had a recommendation of approval. If council agrees, yes.
One second, Vice Mayor.
Well, let her finish her statement.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
If council agrees with this change and gives staff this direction and approves it, staff will return with changes to the terms and conditions for the sale of utilities, a change to the annexation ordinance, and the annexation guidelines.
Okay, Vice Mayor.
Okay, so really the change we're talking about is not the criteria. It is allowing an administrative process instead of every case coming before the council through the Transportation Infrastructure Committee.
That is correct.
That is what we're talking about today, is just adding it an administrative process instead of everything coming to us. We would be the course of
Appeal to decision the staff.
Well, I was going to say, we would be the ones they appeal to.
Correct. But,
but we would be the administrative process would make the initial determination based on the existing criteria.
Correct. Councilmember Higgins.
Angelica, my understanding is that back in April, we removed the ability for a county dweller to access utilities without annexation. Now you're saying that we want, not you're saying, the policy presented says that we would allow county homes to access or city utilities. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
It's not the process of doing it. It's actual what we're allowing. Before, we wouldn't allow people to we wouldn't allow people to get city service without annexing. Now we're adding it back in that they can get city services without annexing.
Vice Mayor?
Isn't that what this is? Seth?
That is correct. But as part of that process, the property owner would have to apply for annexation. During that review of the annexation application, if it was not in the city's best interest to annex that property due to the operational costs or service issues, then it would be the city staff working with the property owner to see if they would agree to enter into that agreement to receive utilities without annexation. But that would be at when it's at the city's best interest.
Let's do a little history lesson. Yeah. Go back a little further, because there was an ordinance put in place, 3880, that was put in place before I was on council. It's been quite a few years, that required annexation before you could get utilities. And we have been backing away enough to allow options, to allow them to annex with options. Before, it was pretty cut and dried. And we've been trying to make it possible, but they have to meet the criteria, that meet standards in order to do that annexation.
That is correct.
That is what all the standards have been changing to. And now this is just adding another one. Okay, we've put standards in place. Now it's going to be administrative. So the rule for annexation took place quite a number of years ago.
2001.
Okay.
But I think the difference, there's a slight difference where we're going, I believe. We are still seeking that someone comes in, will apply for annexation. If they're in the county, we have the option to look at it as saying, really the question the council is, we may have an annexation that is, or someone, a property owner, that is adjacent to the city today. That's, but doesn't receive city water today. The question is, are we willing to just sell them the utilities without the requirement of annexation? That's one option. There's also sometimes we have properties that are in a county island that are not contiguous to the city. They may be, some distance inside the county island. Today, when we've said, this is where it's created the dilemma, is that while we're saying you have to be annexed in order to receive city utilities. Well, in some cases, we can provide them the utilities, but we don't want to annex them because then it creates problems with fire service or whatever it might be. So really what we would prefer is the option to consider where we wouldn't have to require the annexation, but we give them the option, we can still go ahead and sell them the utilities and provide that service to them over the long term.
So our first priority or
preference,
thank you. Would be that they annex.
If they're contiguous.
If they meet our standards.
Right.
If they meet our standards. We're not saying just come in and apply for utility service. Right. You need to apply for annexation.
They would have to apply.
Because our preference is that those we serve are also annexed. If through the process we determine that they do not meet the standards that we've established for annexation and it's not in our best interest to move forward, we can still, at our option, offer to provide utility services for which there are independent standards in and of themselves.
Correct.
This isn't an open book.
Right.
They still have to meet certain standards to receive the utility services. And then the applicant can decide, well, okay, I understand that you're not going to allow me to annex. They have two choices. They can either say, I still want the utilities, and so they'll sign the service agreement or whatever it is, or they can appeal to the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, the staff denial of the annexation. And at that point in time, then the committee would take up their application.
And also, Mayor, it may include also I don't know when this would happen, but I guess there is a possibility there may be, sometimes we will deny the ability to, we may not be able to extend the utility services in some cases.
Well, that's what I mean by the standards.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
They have to meet certain standards.
Okay, that's included.
Either we decide we can, for example, if there's a line extension.
Correct.
Then one of the standards might be, listen, we're not in a position to be able to pay to extend that line. But if the person says, I'll pay to extend it, we may decide that they've met the standards.
There you go. Correct.
So, this is, like I said, it's not an open book. They would still have to meet the standards on both cases, the first one being the annexation, which would include the utilities. If we strip away some of those annexation requirements, maybe it's fire service, maybe they live down at the end of a dirt road, and we don't feel comfortable with our ability to provide fire services because we can't get a fire engine in there. But let's say they want to extend the water line down that dirt road. We could decide that they meet the utility standards. Is that accurate?
Okay, yeah,
all right. Councilmember Higgins.
On top of that question.
Well, yes. You're asking me?
Yeah.
I'm the one who's asking them.
I wanted to ask you. But so that dirt road obviously doesn't meet city standards, but we would still allow water to go down there. We would allow them to access the water.
The applicant would be required to bring that property up to current city standards, so it would include the paving of that road.
Okay, now, so we're going to do that for them to receive utilities?
Utilities, yeah, not the, that was the question.
Okay, so, well, you know, let's, the question is, let's say they live at an end of a dirt road. We won't, you know, we can't get a fire engine in and out of a dirt road. We don't like that. Because we can get it in, but we probably can't get it out. That's the problem. Yeah, we can't get it out, though, because it's a mud bog.
How many did you stop?
It's a mud bog. So we're saying that for them to be able to have utility, let's say the water is what they want. Well, water, sewer. They would have to extend the water and the sewer lines. What we're saying is that one of the standards of getting water and sewer is they would have to pave that road.
Okay. Let me clarify.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you.
It depends on if they're annexed or not.
Not annexed.
So not annexed.
Let's say they're non-annexed.
If they're not annexed, then we would require their site comply with full city standards as part of the utility service agreement. They would be required to get the utilities to their property, even line extensions, and they would be required to pay all fees. If they wanted to appeal any of those standards on their site, that would be to the TIC. But we would be determining that it's not in our best interest to annex them because of the access issues. We don't want to take our truck.
But assuming no annexation is off the table, we determine that. The question is, are they going to be required to build the street?
Not to the property, just their property.
Okay, wait, not to the property, just their property. I'm a little confused.
Well, you could have a road that goes back to where they live, but not necessarily owned owned by them. So, but the section in front of their residence, that's what they would be. That's what you're saying that would be required. Because that's our, well, here's what happens today is, okay, if we don't provide, it sounds, it's a patchwork, it's a dilemma. You do this all over, every city has this dilemma. If you don't put the requirement to put the street in then, when will it ever happen?
Well, because, well, then it's an annexation issue. If they want to annex, then that's a requirement for annexation. That's where I'm trying to figure out, if we're going to sell utilities, it would seem like the standards relate to utilities. If we're going to annex, then the standards relate to annex. I can see how annexation would include bringing up all the infrastructure to city standards.
Yes.
I'm trying to sort out how, if we're just going to run a sewer and water line, how we would, and deny annexation, how we would still require the infrastructure to be brought up to city standards.
That's part of our utility service agreement and has been since 2001. We require their site to comply with city standards so that when we annex them in the future.
So you're just carrying over that which was enacted in 2001. Okay,
yes, correct.
I understand.
Yeah, we've been Mrs.
Long.
Way on it
I
for
felt
6 years.
Compelled to say something. the way this has worked, the road along their frontage in particular, there's a particular city standard for what that road looks like. What's happened is if it doesn't seem reasonable, there's no reason to build that 40 feet of road to full city standards. We actually have an appeal process through the deputy city manager. We can go and say, look, we don't think it makes sense to build a full curb and gutter and street light. We think 24 feet of asphalt with ribbon curb on it makes more sense. And a deputy city manager then is authorized to modify the standard requirements for that.
I'm still trying to get over the difference between annexation process and utility. Because I think what we're saying we're doing is we're moving away from what was enacted years ago, which was we're going to tie annexation and utility services together. As I understand it, we are reviewing whether we want to deviate, we want to change the policy and say that we will provide utility services even though we don't want to annex. Am I missing the boat on that?
But I think we've separated the difference between the operational side of providing services under annexation where we can't do it, but keeping in place the obligation to at least bring up the infrastructure.
But if we're not going to annex, I mean.
Well, the idea is, are we not going to annex now, or is it something that may happen later?
Okay.
And so that's why.
I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. If it does, let's assume that that street doesn't affect the ability to provide sewer and water. Mm-hmm. We're still not annexing. If they want to come in future, that's a condition of annexation, fix the street. So why are we.
Because once we've sold them utilities, our ability to have them comply with the streets is not the same.
I hear you.
If I could put on my environmental hat for just a moment, one of the
please do.
One of the issues on the dirt roads is we've got a significant statewide and more regional issues on dust. And one of the things we talk to people about when they come in is we're trying to get rid of dirt roads across the entire county and get them stabilized to some level because that's a continuing source of
okay.
pollution.
Okay. So what we're I mean that's fine. I just want to make sure we understand that if we're going to deny annexation, we still want to have certain kind of standards that have really nothing, I don't want to say nothing, they're not directly related to the ability to provide sewer and water.
No,
but they are. But there are other objectives that we're trying to accomplish, for example, stabilization,
right?
Dirt roads, those kind of things, which we believe are important enough that for us to be willing to consider providing utility services, we want to accomplish this other goal, which is equally important, even though they're not going to meet the other standards of annexation.
Right.
That's what we're saying.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
fair.
All right.
And then remember, these are county islands.
I understand.
So we're not reaching outside, you know, beyond right. the city limits. It's what's affecting us inside.
I'm just trying to reconcile the difference between we don't think you meet the standards of annexation, which would in and of themselves require you to upgrade the infrastructure, including streets. We're going to provide you with utilities, but we're still going to make you meet the same standards we would have if you would have been annexed. To me, that's sort of
well, the only I think
there's
the difference
a contradiction there,
is it's not the complete obligations of what they would have to do for annexation. Remember, this long road that's getting to it, in order for us maybe to be able to agree to annexation, would have had to been completely
right.
graded and paved and all that. So you're right. The compromise is then can we at least get what's in front of that property
paved
at some level of pavement and move forward from there?
Okay, stabilization rather than full curb gutter.
And
sidewalk.
Including the drive or the road that may be leading up to their
gotcha.
Property.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
So the process still is, though, no one can just come to the city and ask for city services. They have to go through the annexation process.
That's the recommendation, that they have to come in, they go through the annexation, all of the various departments look at that property to determine whether or not it's in the best interest of the city. The proposal to council today is if staff decides, based on the criteria that have been laid out, that it's not in the best interest of the city, that there's the option to go ahead and provide utility services without having to bring that to council for specific action, that staff can do it.
Okay. It helps us to perform that process has the evaluation process. And so by going into that process, all those departments provide the evaluation that helps us determine if it's in the best interest of the city or not.
But for a property that you know you wouldn't want in the city to start with, I mean, you know that ahead of time, but they would still have to go through the annexation process, even though we know that we're going to turn them down.
Well, we try
don't
not
know
to
that
make those decisions until we go through an
yeah.
evaluation.
Well, I mean, if
we really don't create a list out there that we really go through an evaluation first.
Okay. And yeah. I'm just in this discussion section, it just says staff is recommending we modify the terms and conditions for the sale utilities to return to the option of available prior to April 2007. So prior to April 2007, people could come to the city without annexation process and ask for city services.
No.
But they still
no.
had to meet all of
no,
the city standards.
You can look through in there. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
In
so
2001, the terms and conditions were changed to require annexation.
Okay. Right.
It's just from an administrative standpoint, we created a process in which we can do some evaluation.
Okay.
And that's the difference. But they were still required to annex to receive city service. There just was another section that said, however, if you comply with some of these other things, we can administratively
okay,
sell you utilities.
Okay, but it still came through the paperwork of annexation. Okay,
correct.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you, Mayor. What I took away from our Transportation Committee meeting was that the spirit is we're trying to increase flexibility to get the services, give you more tools. The balance is when we run into these what would seem to be extraordinary situations, the balance would be at the Transportation Committee where we could balance staff's recommendations with the applicant. So I felt very comfortable, and I can't speak for the other committee members, that this seemed like a reasonable request and a change. So that's where we've come from.
Councilmember Summers?
I'm looking at the meeting minutes, and it has the various, on page 7, has the various options, utility service agreement option 2.
When I was on the tick over the past 2 years, I remember these cases continued to come forward where a property owner would request annexation or request utility service agreements. The utility service agreements came with a price for bringing that up, often thousands of dollars, $10,000, $20,000 in some cases. And then the crying began. I'm being mean, but what the heck. Of I can't afford that. It's, you know, I permitted my house in the county, and now I'm trying to get the utilities, and it's going to cost me too much money to bring it up to standard for Mesa. So changing this back to the way we used to do things, it's not quite changing it back, but going to back to this option, are we going to, is the Transportation Infrastructure Committee going to run into the same cases where you get the violins planning on how much money it's going to cost? Because I'm, and if that's the case, are we looking at options to be able to take those costs and spread them out over time?
I think you're exactly right. When the cost of doing the improvements is high for a single-family resident, I think it is going to be a problem.
And it's the cost that every Mesa homeowner pays.
That's correct.
When the home builders build the house in Mesa, I paid it.
Right.
Dave pays it. In his old job, used to implement it, so it's not as though we haven't paid these things
correct.
Before. So typically, it's part of the mortgage payment, so it's spread out over 30 years. These folks have to pay at one time. Do we have an option? Is there some kind of option where they could spread that over time or what? Because we're going to hear this again.
Looked at what the options were. We were specifically asked to do that. Honestly, we didn't come up with any real good ways for the city to do that other than the city acting as the bank and setting up some kind of a payment schedule. We didn't think that was something we wanted to recommend. We were asked specifically to look at special improvement districts. Quite frankly, when you've got just one resident, that's probably not a viable option for them. We tried to find a way to figure out how to spread it out, but again, kind of looking at what we felt from a staff perspective was in the best interest of the city, we didn't come up with any good funding options.
See, and this is a concern for me. I don't like the option of all the annex or you don't receive services or receive services. I like options. But on the other hand, I think if you're going to receive utilities, you should pay your fair share. And that is what was part of the impetus to change the policy back in 2007. And I think what we're going to end up seeing, as we did in 2006 and 2007 before we made that policy change, are folks coming forward, they're going to complain about how much that costs, particularly because it's so upfront, and they're going to be asking us to waive those fees, and it does not seem right for existing residents to, you're almost bearing that burden, particularly, for example, the road. Let's use the dirt road example. We're trying to cut down on the PM10 and the dust particles. That has, because of that county development, that has negative externalities. It counts negatively against the city of Mesa. These things to mitigate those effects cost money. That's just one example. And so what I'm afraid of is going back to this is that we're going to end up with folks trying to get future councils to waive fees where it might be more advantageous to say, you know what, you come in collectively with your neighborhood, then we have the option of a special improvement district, which can spread that out over 30 years. One that gets them, encourages them to annex to it, provides an improvement in the level of service, not just for the house, but for the entire neighborhood, makes it easier on the city.
Councilmember Higgins.
We should note that the fees that they get charged roadway-wise are for their frontage only. We do have programs set up so that if they extend a utility line past other people's properties, that we will monitor for the next 10 years a utility buy-in, and anybody can buy into it, we will collect for them. So
if the neighbor waits 10 years, 6 months,
that's true.
Then you just paid for your neighbor's property.
Well, I think one of the things we have to realize is that, number one, the problems you've raised, Councilmember, they're there, we're not going to avoid them. And whether it's us or a subsequent council or whatever, this is going to be the issue we will deal with as a city for years and years to come. as we grow into the county. And the fact is that we have to look at it, that providing utility services is really an accommodation to the property owners. We have our goals and objectives, but I think we're trying to accommodate the property owners by providing these utilities. And there's no way we can escape these challenges. This is sort of the proverbial Hobson's choice. You know, we really are danged if we do, danged if we don't. And I think that's something we're going to have to deal with as we grow into the county areas, because we have two scenarios. Number one, those structures and those developments that were done years ago before the city was even close, and those we're just going to have to deal with as is because they're so unique and varied. We have the others of people who are going to try to develop now to escape city. I don't have nearly as much sympathy for them and willingness to accommodate those, because they're trying to do a backdoor end around, and I see it all the time. And those, I think, we need to be resolute with saying, no, we understand that you will eventually be in the city. We will require that you meet our standards, because it's not fair to impose that burden on the rest of the residents of Mesa because you chose to take an alternative route with ulterior motives. And I don't have nearly as much sympathy for them. However, we do have people who, in good faith, years ago, built out in the county for the county lifestyle. There were no utilities available. They're on a well. They're on septic. And now urban life has caught up with them. And I believe since they are within our strip service annex area, they're within our service area, we have the responsibility to find that balance where we can provide them services while also not creating an unfair burden on existing city residents who have paid that price. So, Councilmember Higgins.
So I still have a couple questions. There's your annexation fee, right? There's a basic annexation fee.
The annexation equity fee or the annexation application fee?
Application.
Okay.
Is that that's a smaller sum of money, and obviously the annexation equity fee, that's the one that's making up for all the infrastructure.
Right.
So, but isn't the application fee also a large sum of money right now?
No, the application fee is
$1,300 plus 120, 130 per lot.
Okay.
So it's pretty minimal. And that's basically to try to cover the staff time associated with doing the evaluation.
Absolutely understand that. The question I have, though, is there are county islands within my district, of course, where there's horse property. There's no reason whatsoever these people want to annex in because they want to keep, whatever, we'll say the 3 horses per acre, and our city standards say 1.2 horse per acre. So there's reasons that they don't want annex. However, their well quality is dropping, and they need to have city water. I'm going to say need, okay?
Yeah.
But they don't want annex because they have the rural lifestyle with this multiple horses, animals, etc. But they still would have to go through the annexation process in our proposed new process.
Right. And in that situation, taking a theoretical horse property out there at the end of a half mile of a dirt road, the staff recommendation would probably be that it was not in the best interest of the city to annex that property. But if the well has gone bad, they couldn't get a new county septic system, that our evaluation would likely be that it would be appropriate to sell them utilities. They'd have to pay the utility service fee. They'd have to develop to city standards.
Now, in that case, though, once again, if someone developed, and here's where we need to balance this. If someone developed a property, a horse property, mm-hmm. and I understand their desire to maintain the rural lifestyle, and they feel threatened by the city, their well's gone bad. Mm-hmm. Their alternative is to come to the city, because that's the only option they have. Once again, if their well's gone bad, there's a price to be paid to provide themselves with water. And I'm not saying we gouge them, but we need to be fair. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be a balanced approach. Hey, fair and balanced.
Kid,
wow.
But the whole point is, I totally agree, they should obviously pay for everything that's coming to their house. Mm-hmm. The city is not in charity work at all. Right. However, they do not want to annex. There's no...
I think what the council member is suggesting, I mean, there's another hypothetical situation.
There's lots of those.
Where this horse property could be adjacent to the city today, but they just don't want to be part of the city for the reasons you've given. So the staff may look at it and say, well, no, we can annex it. It's next to a fire hydrant and all these other things. But certainly we would go through the appeals process to bring that to the committee and then make a decision that the council would say, no, as long as they're complying with our standards of utility services, you know, we're not here to try to...
Wait, so you're saying the appeal process, and this is a weird theoretical, staff would recommend annexation,
and
the person would appeal saying, I don't want to annex. It could be a negative annexation.
So the question is, you know, I guess that's the struggle is, do we balance that out? Someone who says, I only want to buy utility services, I'm willing to comply to all the standards, but I don't want to be part of the city.
Let's skip the annexation process and go on.
So, and then, you know, I guess that's something we can look at, because frankly, really, this isn't about us trying to grab people into the city. One, we just want to make sure it's fair for all our current utility customers to receive it. But, and then those who want to be annexed, though, we want to make sure it doesn't have a negative impact on our services. So there's that balance. And I suspect that we'll be able to easily work with someone who's maybe eligible for annexation, but doesn't want it, all they want is their utility services. I think our philosophy is, let's try to make it work for both sides of us. Yeah.
And maybe that's just a fee, not called an annexation fee, because even in that case, you have work time to look at the property.
Well, it'd be a utility hookup fee type. It would be a review. It's an evaluation fee, yeah.
Do you have that currently?
We call it the annexation application fee.
Right.
If we sell utilities, and this has been since... for several years, we would do it under a utility service agreement, and all of the fees are exactly the same.
Okay.
So,
Ms. Spinner?
Yeah. Go ahead. Mayor and staff, I'd ask, jump in if I'm going to say something incorrectly, but I believe the code now, the philosophy that is currently reflected in the code is that if you can annex, and if it is meets the fire needs, meets the police needs, meets the city's operations, you must annex in order to receive water. So, if the council wants to change that and give the staff the discretion that, okay, you can, but for whatever reason, this property owner does not want to annex because of the horse property, right now staff doesn't have the discretion to say, okay, we're going to enter into a utility service agreement.
Well, let me ask you this. Is that something this council would, we don't have to prove it, but at least set it up so we can have that discussion and debate that. Right.
Yeah, you would have to give staff the direction to change that code.
Are we willing to give staff the instruction to at least set up a scenario where somebody could apply for or could be provided with.
Who might be eligible, I guess, or meets the qualifications for annexation, but they just want the utility services and don't want to be brought into the city.
Right. And right now, under the code scenario, that we require annexation, and what we're saying is that we would want to consider, or we should at least discuss further, the idea that we would change that ordinance.
Right.
To require that. It would require an ordinance change.
Mayor, I would agree with that statement.
Oh, thank you, Councilmember. I appreciate the validation. Vice Mayor.
Well, and there are scenarios, as one that we recently discussed, where a property was adjacent to the city, had lines running in front of his property. It was not that big of an issue. It would be a pretty good expense for him to get all the service utility stuff there. And he didn't want to annex, and roundabout you find out because he's looking to do group homes and wants to stay out of our zoning, and that's not in our best interest either. So,
which could then be, I mean, you know, do we want to bring basically zoning questions into service agreements, which is what we'd have to do.
Well, that's actually what happens now, because part of the requirement is they have to meet the city standard, which includes compliance with the general plan. And in that particular one, it's a low-density residential, and they were coming in with a use that was totally not consistent with what the city's vision is for that area.
Councilmember Summers.
Let's use that one as an example. He makes that agreement. We hook him up to water and sewer.
He changes it,
gets his zoning. You have $7 million homes that are now being used for assisted living. And can we disconnect him from water for breaking that agreement?
No.
I would defer that question to Debbie. I think
No. I mean, legally, could we? Sure. Realistically, could we?
I'm not sure I'm getting that same face from our city attorney.
Well, I think we could put it in the service agreement that we could. The realistic thing is, are we, as a city, even if it's in an agreement, are we willing to go back and say, we're going to cut your water off and you have this assisted living and there's a bunch of people who need assisted living? Are we willing to go in and take that step? No way would we ever do that. So, really, we'd have a clause in agreement that's basically toothless. Apparently, somebody does believe we do that. Vice Mayor and then Councilmember Summers.
Well, by the same token, going back to, say, the horse property, it is possible to annex in and still have an exclusion of non-conforming because it was existing non-conforming zoning.
Right.
That they could remain as they were grandfathered in.
You're exactly right. We certainly have areas like that that come in as legal non-conforming.
Debbie?
I forgot what the question was. That
well, the question was whether we could cut the water off.
No,
cut the water off. Our advice would be no, because once you provide water, you cannot cut the water off unless they're failing to pay their bill.
Hey, right.
We can't impose land use regulations in a utility service agreement.
Plus, we're trying to implement land use regulations in another
jurisdiction.
The county is a political entity, and so we would trying to be.
And that's the challenge by extending the utility service here. Once you've done that, you are the utility provider.
Well,
you can't use that to leverage.
And we have one issue in front of us. I think that this is really probably the exception, though. I mean, 99% of our cases are going to be what we're talking about. The horse property isn't a theoretical. It exists out there. And that's probably our run-of-the-mill dilemma, is that we have a non-conforming use that's existed for years and years and years. We will have the exception come up, such as what we've been faced with, what the committee was faced with, and they rejected it. I think that's probably the exception because, once again, that's a recent development. That's somebody who could have developed in the city who chose not to. And I believe one reason they chose not to was to escape the responsibilities of developing the city, and the sympathy really isn't that great. I think we can control those, seeing them coming from miles away. And in that case, I don't sense the responsibility on the city's part. I sense more the responsibility on the developer's side to do what they need to do to come up to city standards. Councilman Fender, you had something?
Just to add to that, I think the system worked. We have a check and balance. The Transportation Committee looked at it. And it is as it is. And I think these very few exceptions will be, they'll have their due process, a public process, and so we shouldn't worry as much about the exceptions and look at generally what we're trying to do.
Councilmember Summers?
I'm probably going to be the lone vote in this, but I oppose the change. I oppose it right now because at least in my own mind, I've heard from two different angles. Whether the annexations would be in the best interest of the city or whether they would not be should be the only measure. If this moves forward and it's approved, should be the only measure. What's in the best interest of the city and its citizens should be the only measure of whether these are annexed. And whether something, and the fire chief has been sitting here, or our deputy chief's been sitting here. I just promoted you. Congratulations.
Thank you. I think.
Whether something has a fire hydrant in front of it should not be an automatic yes or no. Just because something lacks fire hydrants, we might be able to say that this is within our 4-minute response area, that other than the lack of fire hydrants, this would be accepted. We would recommend annexation with this condition.
Certainly like Mr. Hagerman's annexation, we met the intent of the code.
Right.
He had a setback issue. We recommended the fire sprinklers. He met that.
Correct.
Intent.
Now, initially, though, in that particular case, in using that as an anecdote, you would have recommended denial. That denial
Correct.
Shouldn't be enough in these cases. What I would suggest is that come forward saying, while we don't recommend it as is, we would recommend approval if they did either the hydrants or the fire sprinklers, so that, because it is in the best interest. His property is fairly close to a fire station. Other than the fire protection issue, everything else seemed to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to weigh into the decision as well, and it has to be in the best interest of the city. Not whether or not somebody wants to annex or not, you can still drop a well. It may be inconvenient. It may be getting more and more expensive as the water table goes down, but those are the choices. I represent the citizens of Mesa, and that is how I make my decisions on whether it's in their best interest, not somebody who chooses to live in the county. On the issue of the horses, however, maybe that's a zoning change we ought to consider. I don't care how many horses you have, if that's the rural lifestyle. But I'm very concerned the direction. I'm very concerned with the fact that these are going to be one-time fees, upfront, high costs. We don't really have an option to spread those out over time, and my fear is that we're going to see us, not us, but maybe future councils, start to back down in the fees because they look so high. And that goes back on, that falls back on our citizens almost paying the way for somebody who doesn't, I don't know how to articulate that.
Tack something on to Councilmember Summers. It's called a home improvement loan or a home equity loan when you need cash to improve your property. But that's not the question. The question is, what was the change in history when we went from to this spot annexation? Why did we go away from like histories of annexation where it used to be 51% of a neighborhood or whatever the old rules were?
Councilmember Higgins, my recollection is that the change in philosophy came probably 2 or 3 years ago, where we were only annexing those properties that were directly adjacent or contiguous to the city. And the decision of the council was that they wanted to encourage annexation, and the understanding that this county island is going to sooner or later come into the city. So we wanted to encourage annexation as it developed, as opposed to waiting until all of it could come in at once. And so the goal was to promote annexation and rather than providing utility service separate and apart from annexation.
And let me just clarify, it's also this kind of vicious circle, because back then when we weren't annexing properties that weren't contiguous to the city, you still had county island properties that weren't adjacent to the city, but now they wanted city utility services. And so it came back to this philosophical, well, wait a minute, if we're going to provide them utility services, shouldn't they be part of the city? So then the council made the decision, let's broaden the annexation to go, we have a property owner who's interested in coming into the city or wants utilities, we'll require them to be part of it, be part of the city also.
I think the reality is we've gone through the history of this is something that councils have struggled with, because it's really a problem without a solution.
Yeah.
Because every time you turn a corner, there's another dilemma. There's another exception. There's another one. It's just a tough issue. And regardless of what this council decides to do, my guess is that we will be back here again, looking at it again, and future councils will probably also be looking at it, because it's a tough situation. It's really hard to balance these things because there are so many different scenarios, and you have to decide what's fair, and that's just hard. And I think what we should probably need to do, and as I understand it, let me ask if my understanding is correct, if what the staff has suggested, where we will now under certain scenarios provide utility services without annexation, is that in and of itself, will that require a code change?
Yes, it will.
So we can't make a decision anyway. No. We're just giving direction that if we want to at least consider that, then the staff will go back and work up that code change and then come back to us, and then we can debate the merits of that code change, which we will again. And Councilmember Summers has already lodged his vote, so you can stay home that meeting. You already know how you're going to vote.
I'm calling in.
Mayor, I think there's also two questions there in terms of, do you want the staff to be able to enter into utility service agreement short of annexation? And that is only under the circumstances where the staff has determined that annexation is not in the best interest of the city, or do you want to provide even more discretion to the staff so that if the property owner doesn't want to annex,
why don't we have staff at least come up with both scenarios, and then we can decide which of those two, or maintaining the status quo, we want to go with. So that would leave us with three options, as I understand it. Maintain the status quo.
Which is do nothing.
And move ahead with how we have it right now. Require everybody to go through the annexation process, and if the annexation is deemed unworthy or whatever by staff, then we could still opt to provide utility services, or we could bypass the annexation for somebody who came in and just said, I have no interest in annexing, I'm going to apply for utility services. Those would be the three options that we're looking at. And I'd at least maybe prepare that we may never actually act on any of those or even have those on our table for to vote up or down, but perhaps we should come up with something more formal to see how it would work. Vice Mayor?
After being through several of these discussions over the last few years for the same things in various forms, I'm anxious to discuss it again. But I will say, as our city manager brought up, The change we did back in 2007 was, up to that point, it was required to be contiguous with the city. And we had a number of cases where there were property owners, and some were significant property owners, that could not annex because they were not contiguous, because they had somebody in between them, and it may have been one lot in between them that prevented them from coming into the city when they wanted to come into the city. So we agreed, okay, we will allow to not be contiguous, but then we created another problem where you had all the little onesies twosies way out of way that we can't provide services for. So we're still morphing this as we go, but let's have another discussion, and we might tweak a little more.
And I'm sure we will. And I'm sure the next council will tweak it and tweak it and tweak it until we find, till at the end of the day, we run out of property.
Yeah, there you've got them all
we're
in
there.
The city.
Okay, well, let's move ahead in that direction and then come back when you have that and present that to us, and we'll decide then which one we want to actually narrow it down to and debate. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards committee. Move motion by Councilmember Summers, second by Vice Mayor. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Five, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Summers.
Yesterday at Fire Station 217, we had what I believe will be the last open house for the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan, and we had over 30 residents show up. All right, stakeholders show up, so we consider that a very successful meeting. The next meeting on the Gateway Strategic Development Plan, for anybody interested, I believe is on the 20th, and that's the Planning and Zoning meeting, which will also be televised, so if you can't show up to that, you have the option. You can always watch it on Channel 11 or streaming video at mesaaz.gov now, right?
Councilmember Higgins?
On Monday night, Charlotte McDermott and I attended the Intercultural Dialogue 5th Annual Friendship and Interfaith Dialogue Dinner. Oh, and Mary Bruin was there also. And, oh, some other people. I can't remember them all. Anyway, where we heard Janice Scott give a very motivational speech. She is from the Governor's Office on Faith and Community-Based Initiatives.
Good. Mary, I see you sitting there.
Mayor,
Oh, is that part of your deal?
Yeah, okay. Well, you guys are the one.
All right, any more reports? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Just before I go through the meeting schedule, I just want to highlight two, really, I think, some positive things that's happening in the city. And I ask Mary if she could just give us a quick update and show some slides on our latest Building Stronger Neighborhoods project. And then after that, I'm going to ask Carrie and Willie Black to come forward to talk about some awards that the city has won recently. Go ahead, Mary.
Well, it's with great pleasure I have to talk about this project. It is with the Casa del Sol project, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce the staff. Katie Brown is our volunteer coordinator, who's done an extraordinary job of organizing resources, community with the nonprofit, as well as with community-based and faith-based communities in getting projects done to improve our community. And Susan was the coordinator. This project was from our first Building Strong Neighborhood Initiative, and it really brought the neighborhood together, and we're really pleased to go ahead and start seeing some of these projects. Councilman Finter was there. He's been there for both of the projects within that, and we thank you, so he can also answer any questions.
We're just going to show a few slides here quickly.
The project was a joint partnership with WAMU, which is now a part of Chase Bank, Hands on Greater Phoenix, the Casa del Sol Neighbors, as well as the Neighborhood Outreach Office. It kicked off on Saturday, October 18th at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. We had over 50-plus volunteers. This was right at the beginning, and then more arrived shortly after. We picked three homes in the neighborhood that were identified through code compliance and through our neighborhood team. We learned in the surveys that 83% of the residents knew their neighbors, and so we utilized those residents in the team to help us identify properties where residents needed the assistance. In this one, you can see the backyard as well as now the new backyard. 2421 East Alpine. In addition to landscaping, there's also where the volunteers trimmed off old chip paint, repainted fascias, and this part repainted the canopy on the house. 2010 East 3rd Drive. You would have never known from the first picture there were actually windows behind there. Those are all freshly painted shutters, as well as the whole front of the house has been repainted. Maybe you want to talk about the contribution?
WAMU and Hands On, this project was actually part of Corporate Month of Service. And so there's an allotment of funds that they can contribute to projects like this. And we received rock for the Women's Front Yard. So they contributed in all three projects $1,000 to renovate these homes.
And
there you go.
That's it. We just wanted to highlight that and show you the good work that's going on.
That's great.
Mayor, if I could, we truly need to celebrate this. The difference that it's made in this neighborhood is you can feel it. And Katie and Susan, great efforts. If we need to multiply this process and this thing throughout the city. So thank you so much for all you do.
And thanks to WAMU and WAMU Chase.
WAMU Chase.
And Chase WAMU. WAMU Chase.
Chase ate at WAMU.
They rock.
And Hands On Greater Phoenix formally make a difference.
Great.
Awesome. And if there's anything that we can do to formally, or I can do to formally recognize them, please let me know. Okay, because we appreciate when people invest in the community, and they do it. That was great what they did by putting their time and their energy and their efforts into that. So thank you.
There is a six-minute video on Councilman Finter's website, so if you have an opportunity to go out and view the entire video.
In your spare time.
And that is www.what? Alex Rocks?
Okay. All right. And Mary, I'm going to ask Carrie to kind of kick off the next. Just we want to highlight some national recognition that our solid waste operations and individuals have received in the past couple of weeks. So, Carrie.
Thank you, Chris. Mayor and Council, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. I'm here with Willie Black, who's our solid waste director, and Pat Rady, who's our solid waste safety and training representative. And we have some exciting news as well. Last week, it was the National Solid Waste Association of North America's conference in Tampa, Florida. And that organization is international, about 8,100 solid waste professionals that are a part of that membership. And City of Mesa received three awards. Two I'm going to mention, and then I'm going to turn over the last one to Willie. The first one was the Lifetime Member Award, and that was presented to Willie Black, our solid waste director, for his contributions that he's made to our national organization. Willie instructed hundreds and hundreds of individuals in solid waste management, as well as in our national chapter for Arizona, and certainly all the contributions that he's made to solid waste and recycling here in the city of Mesa. So I wanted to congratulate him for that, and this is his fancy award that he received. And then secondly, there was a Professional Achievement Award, and that was provided to Pat for his outstanding contributions in the development of safety programs, certainly with the City of Mesa, as well as his former employer, which was the City of Glendale, California. And Pat has developed a number of programs to keep our solid waste representatives safe on the road, and so we're very proud of those two accomplishments, and Willie's going to talk about the last one.
Mayor and Council members, the last award that we have is actually for our collection operation. And it's the Gold Excellence Award for a collections operation, and it's for a project that you thought annexations took long. Alley conversion service to curbside took probably over 20 years to do, but we finally finished it in the fall of 2007, and being recognized by your peers for such an accomplishment was a huge honor for us as the City of Mesa.
And that's it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say something. You know, this is, and there's dozens of solid waste jokes we could do. You've heard them all, so we're going to stay away from them.
Thank you,
the
Mayor.
Fact of the matter is that, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
The fact of the matter is that, you know, you guys do a great job. And the thing about things like solid waste is that when you're doing such a good job that you barely notice you're there. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing, that when you're not there, believe me, you notice it real quickly.
Right.
And so the fact that you go about doing your job every day, and people take it for granted, I believe, in this city because you do such a good job. So thank you very much, and you those awards are richly deserved. And it's been interesting. We were over at the City Hall at the mall. We were talking with, we had one of your brand new trucks. I think it literally had like 70 miles on it.
Yes.
And it was actually a really cool thing to look at. all nice and new, and we start talking about the transition, going back to even the little choo-choo train, where, you know, that I remember going up and down the alleys, and guys, I always wanted to when I was a kid to ride on the back of those. It seemed like fun. And to how far we've progressed and how we process, and you really are to be commended for the good job you do. So thank you very much. We really appreciate that.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Mayor, just finally, again, you mentioned City of Haltom Hall. I'd like to thank all the employees that participated. This is our second year. We started out 2 years ago where we began in we do Fiesta Mall during the spring, and we've done Superstition during the fall time. And each year we get tremendous feedback, and I think this last event at Superstition Springs was tremendous. I mean, the turnout at the mall, we were hoping everybody was spending a lot of money, but just the interaction with the city staff, both out in the parking lot as well as there in the mall, was wonderful. We appreciate all the council members who came and spent time meeting with the public. We think it's a great program where we can go out to the public and be there to answer questions and introduce them to city services. Just continuing, as Councilman Jones will remind us, we have pancake breakfast this Saturday, November 1st, at Station 202, which is 830 South Stapley. That's always a great turnout for that pancake breakfast. And the reminder again, we have our next council meeting will be Monday, November 3rd. We'll see you then. Thank you, Mayor.
Also, one more item. The Phoenix police officer, Shane Figueroa, who was tragically killed, was a Mesa resident. And so,
Mesa High grad,
and so we're the condolences to his family, and you know, the pride we feel for having one of our own who's willing to put their life in danger to serve the public, regardless of which city it's in. Shane was a Mesa resident. His family are Mesa residents and longtime Mesa residents. His services are this Saturday also, Saturday at 10 o'clock at the Red Mountain Institute there on McKellips, just east of Power. So remind of that. Ms. Crocker, are there any requests to speak from citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
If move not, we have a motion to adjourn. Second, all in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.